Anytime you're feeling lonely, anytime you're feeling blue.
Seriously, dude, if you don't shut the fuck up, I'm gonna have to kill you.
Anytime you feel downhearted.
Undaunted, Patrick launched into the opening bars of Eddie Arnold's 1948 country hit, Anytime, for what must have been the 400th time that weekend.
Anytime you're thinking about me.
There was a groan around the table, and Patrick grinned sheepishly, unable to stop the tape loop running in his head from dribbling off his tongue and splashing all over the rest of us.
Anytime. You want me back again. That's the time I'll come back home to you.
Y'all still want me to come with you?
We decided to spend Thanksgiving in the one city that represents the values of family and tradition the most, Las Vegas. We were a motley crew, me and my new wife, G, still had that wonderful new wife smell, Jeff, a friend and former apartment mate of ours who had recently joined us on the West Coast, Russell, a friend of Patrick's who had helped me get my first job in L.A. as an unpaid apprentice film editor, and the aforementioned Patrick. Patrick was the youngest brother of Eric, my longtime roommate and best friend from high school. I met him 10 years earlier on that very same occasion, Thanksgiving. Eric, who had just become my dorm roommate a few weeks before that, invited me to spend the Thanksgiving holidays at his house in Troy, a suburb of Detroit, about 4 hours by car from Interlaken. For those of you who are football fans, you may know that the mighty Detroit Lions have a tradition of playing a home football game on Thanksgiving, and Eric's extended family was going to gather at this game to kick off the festivities. Sorry. We got in the night before, and I got the chance to meet Eric's mom and dad and his brother Patrick. His older brother, high school football star Vince, was expected back the next day. Eric came from an open-minded arm of a pretty traditional family. I don't know if he went through any grief deciding to ditch the local high school and its sports program for the rarefied environment of Interlaken and a major in dance. My sense is that his parents were cool with it, and his brothers and friends were mostly cool, but a little wary. Male dancers have a reputation superseded only by hairdressers and fashion designers. And I think they were all concerned he'd turn into a flighty, shrieking dance fag. And so they were all very curious and wary about meeting his new roommate, who, on some level, represented a side of Eric that they really didn't understand. Days keep getting better, nights keep getting better, days keep getting better, nights keep getting better, it's true. Like most people who came to Interlaken, Eric followed a different drummer than those he left behind. It takes a pretty strong drive to make you leave home alone in high school and face the slings and arrows of an art education in the face of a community and or family, or frankly, country, that views such things with a mixture of curiosity and concern, or in the saddest and most extreme cases, derision and scorn.
It's after years and years of practice and a case of real bad knees. While the other guys were out playing with the football, I was home banging on the keys, and it got me right where I am.
Now the prodigal son was returning home with his roommate, and although nothing was said, I could see everybody sizing me up as they met me, shaking my hand with a firm grip, and trying to determine whether I was a bad influence on their little boy. After After a good dinner and pleasant small talk, we went upstairs to bed. Since Vince wasn't expected back until the next day, Eric told me it would be all right if I slept in his bed. Tired and facing a busy Thanksgiving day, I shed my clothes, jumped into bed, and turned out the light. Imagine my surprise when, a couple of hours later, I felt somebody slip into the bed with me.
You! I'm afraid so, Brad.
And imagine Vince's surprise finding his brother's probably gay roommate lying naked in his bed. It was not the best circumstances under which to meet, but after I apologized and explained the mix-up, and after Vince went to go beat Eric awake, everything worked itself out. The football game was awful, until the very end. A moderate fan of the game, I didn't give a hoot for the Lions. When I do watch sports, I want to see a good game. I don't usually care who wins or loses. I just want to see a close, exciting game. And with the Lions up early by 2 touchdowns and the score locked that way for almost all of the rest of the game, it was not what I considered a good game. But I kept my mouth shut because I knew I was in the Lions' den and Eric's family was all true blue Detroit guys. So I munched on popcorn and waited it out. Then, at the very end of the fourth quarter, the other team, Green Bay I think, suddenly scored 2 touchdowns, tying the game as the clock expired. Then, moments into the overtime, they scored again, completing an exciting and improbable comeback win. I was happy, what a game, but again, knew enough to keep my mouth shut. After the game, we all went back to the house, and there the rest of the family convened. Poor Eric was put in the unenviable position of having to introduce me to his extended family, made all the worse because he couldn't remember what anybody's name was. Although Eric can be a bit flighty sometimes, I can't really blame him for his forgetfulness. There are lots of aunts and uncles in his family, and I go through the same kind of name paralysis whenever the larger circle of my extended family gathers together in Seattle. He largely dealt with this difficulty by running away and leaving me standing there in the kitchen, the smiling stranger. The dinner was good, or as good as Thanksgiving dinner can be. Which isn't very, if you ask me. It's far too heavy and beige. Afterwards, the suggestion was made that we all clear a space in the basement, and Eric and I could dance for the family to show them what he'd been learning at this fancy pants private boarding school. Fortunately, Eric was able to talk them out of it, but it is an ignominy visited upon many Interlochen students. At another Thanksgiving dinner at my friend Dave's house, I got to watch my host sweat his way through a solo violin concerto while his bored family looked on. And the next year, Bob made me dance for his friends when I visited him at Thanksgiving. Moral: eat Thanksgiving dinner alone. And then we all went out and played racquetball. I don't know whose perverse idea it is to go play racquetball after Thanksgiving dinner, but the only 2 times I've ever played racquetball have been when I've been visiting somebody for Thanksgiving, right after dinner. Weird. Patrick and I got along well, although he was still under the considerable shadow of his 2 older brothers. There was a strong family tradition in that household. After dinner, Vince would beat Eric up, and then Eric would beat Patrick up, and then Patrick would go kick the dog. We discovered a common fondness for Queen, which helped break the ice, and one evening, when Eric was out, Patrick put me on the phone with Pinky, his girlfriend. Yes, Pinky. She and I talked for what turned into a couple of hours while Patrick looked on flummoxed, wondering if I was moving in on his girl. To both of our chagrins, she wanted to meet me the next night. I think Patrick was worried I was cutting in, but I knew how it was all going to play out. Pinky liked my voice. Since she had never met me, she could imagine that I looked just like Sean Cassidy, or whomever, but those romantic notions would be smashed when she laid eyes on me, which is precisely what happened. It's a phenomenon which has happened more than once. When I was working as a proofreader at Price Waterhouse, I used to get frequent calls from within the company. I'd pick up the receiver and say, "Hello," in my best smooth Barry White phone voice, and then hear stammering giggling on the other end as one of the secretaries excused herself for calling the wrong extension and hung up. The next day, the same thing would happen, but from a different secretary. The rest of the Thanksgiving weekend was much more relaxed and fun, and I got to know the family pretty well, to the point where I sometimes considered myself the fourth brother. And now, 10 years later, I was enjoying a traditional Thanksgiving dinner at Denny's with my brother Patrick. We went on a whim. None of us had any family anywhere nearby, and we thought it would be a good time to visit Sin City while everyone else was off being virtuous with their families. G and I had stopped in Vegas briefly on our way across the country, but driving there after spending 2 days in the canyon country of Utah was just a little too surreal, and we basically ate dinner and went right to bed, overwhelmed by the stimulus. This time, we were determined to do a little gambling. We all read up on the different games on the drive out and had settled on blackjack as the most likely game to master. The play was simple and the odds favorable, and we all felt fairly confident, especially after practicing in the hotel room and making a couple of $1,000s in theoretical money following the system. But there's often this annoying gap between theory and practice, and nowhere is that more true than in Las Vegas. After finding a $5 table, I sat down and proceeded to drop $60 in about 10 minutes. Jeff, always the overachiever, managed to lose something like 17 hands in a row. It's amazing how often the dealer pulls 20 or 21, and within an hour I had used up my gambling budget for the trip. Undaunted and using the time-tested Vegas logic, I just upped my gambling budget, figuring I couldn't lose forever. Part of the problem was the song that was stuck in my head. While Patrick was getting on everybody's last nerve singing Anytime over and over again, I had my own private tape loop repeating in my head. And the name of this jaunty little tune? I've Got the Will to Fail, an oddity from Kathy Lee's Songs of Couch and Consultation album, a bizarre collection of peppy songs about psychiatry and the like.
I've got the will to fail. The will to fail. I have talents that I never use. I try to win, but I love to lose because I've got the will to fail. It's such a thrill to fail.
I've Got the Will to Fail was included in the entertaining first volume of Incredibly Strange Music, compiled by the Culture Vultures at Research, which helped kick off the nostalgic, easy-listening space-age bachelor pad mini-boom that happened during the early 1990s.
I seem to make an effort, but I never do connect. And while I'm very rational, I'm seldom, if ever, practically never correct. Because I've got the will to fail. The will to fail.
Fun, funny, ironic stuff, but still discouraging to be singing about what an undermining loser I am while giving all my money to some stone-faced Korean woman dealer who turns over her third blackjack in a row. I'd much rather be singing Eddie Arnold's Anytime.
And then you say hello, and and I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so, and anyone could tell. You think you know me well, but you don't know me.
Since I grew up in an anti-country music environment, I had never heard of Eddie Arnold. In fact, I still hadn't heard of him until right before the Vegas trip, when Eric's fiancée Susan, a Texas girl, was feeling nostalgic and pulled some old Eddie out, he being a favorite of her father's. Eric, like millions before him, was smitten by Arnold's smooth baritone and catchy, corny tunes. Microsoft Word, ever helpful, has just suggested that I may want to rewrite the previous sentence so that it says, Arnold's smooth baritone smote Eric like millions before him. Thanks, Bill.
For I never knew the art of making love, though my heart ached with love for you. Afraid and shy, I let my chance go by, the chance you might have loved me too. You gave your hand to me.
Dutifully, Eric turned me and Patrick on to him too, and we were both swept up in Eddie mania.
Just a little loving will go a long way, and you'll make me happy the rest of my days. Put your arms around me, then I'll be your slave. 'Cause just a little loving will go a long way.
As it turns out, Eddie Arnold is perhaps the most successful country musician of all time. Who knew? He is one of those very few people who hit the charts in five separate decades, the 40s through the 80s, and has sold in excess of 85 million albums. More than anybody, he was responsible for bringing country music out of the country and polishing it up for city folks. Many country fans rankled at the new production sounds pioneered by the likes of Patsy Cline's producer Owen Bradley, feeling that the lush strings and cocktail piano arrangements watered down the emotional purity of songs played on guitar and sung with a maximum of emotional gusto and a minimum of city-fied polish. But it did open up new markets and helped country music on its way to becoming one of, if not the, major American musical forces today.
Put your arms around me, be your slave, 'cause just a little loving.
Of all of Arnold's wonderful songs, none is as simultaneously sublime and ridiculous as Cattle Call. Its exaggerated yodeling is so far over the top that it never fails to make me stop whenever I hear it, chills running up and down my spine. When I first tracked it down, I put this song on a tape and listened to it over and over again in the car, screaming along badly, glad the windows were up and nobody else had to hear it. The polished production, the Mitch Millery gang of backup singers, or hummers to be more accurate, and Cathedral Echo don't really fit the song, which you imagine is supposed to be sung intimately around a campfire, although with its stratospheric range, I don't know who would be singing it unless the three tenors were having a barbecue. But somehow the incongruity of it all works.
Singing is cattle call. Thank you.
There are a number of great songs in Eddie's arsenal. Besides Cattle Call and the irritatingly catchy Anytime, I also really like Make the World Go Away, I Really Don't Want to Know, and the sublimely corny The Last Word in Lonesome Is Me, which is not to be confused with the second word in Lonesome Is On, or the anti-penultimate word in Lonesome Is So.
And the last word in Lonesome is me. The last word in Lonesome is me. The last word in Lonesome is me. My heart is as lonely as a heart can be lonely. The last word in Lonesome.
After shaking the will to fail and down $200, twice my gambling budget, I sat down at a table about an hour before we had to hit the road and let it all hang out.
Well, if I had a nickel, I know what I would do. I'd spend it all for candy and give it all to you. I'd spend it all for candy and give it all to you. 'Cause that's how much I love you, baby. That's how much I love you.
Fortunately, Lady Luck smiled on me. I doubled down and split two aces on the one hand that I braved the $25 bet instead of my usual $5 or $10 and blackjacked both of them. And I made all my losings back just before we had to get in the car.
Any time you're feeling lonely. Any time.
For years, Patrick was just Eric's younger brother. I would see him only very occasionally and didn't have much of a relationship with him beyond that enthusiastically agreeable guy that Eric tolerated. But all that changed when I moved to L.A. Patrick was also interested in editing and had made it out to L.A. a year or so before I did and was unreasonably generous in helping me get on my feet. He worked hard to get me on a crew with him, my one union gig, and was always ready with advice, even, especially, if I didn't want it. Years of shared dinner parties, often featuring his notorious eggplant parmesan, which is delicious, especially because no matter when he started cooking, it usually wasn't ready until midnight, and poker nights, I am Armando, and shared lunches and bachelor parties, no, honey, they call it a lap dance because the dancer is from Lapland, have brought us close together. And since Eric couldn't make it work in L.A. and has moved on to bigger and better things in the Great Northwest, and I rarely get to see or talk to him, it's more like he is Patrick's brother now than the other way around, if you know what I mean. I once read that Eddie Arnold was slated to do an album with Esquivel and had actually recorded a few tracks with the Mexican Madman before his conservative sensibilities got the better of him and he canceled the date and walked out of the studio. If only.
Whatchamacallit, Esquivel?